Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who has been wanked off by the hand of a 100-year-old ventriloquist dummy. It's Richard Herring. Thank you very much. Lovely to see you. Thanks for coming. You're much better than last week's audience. Welcome to Rich Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast, or as all the cool kids are calling it, Rahel Estepur. I've just got there with that now, and it's over. It's the last one. This is the last in the series. We're doing a double header. It's a menage a trois today. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. If I can interview two people at once, I could barely interview one person at once. So will it be better with two or worse? I don't know. The big news, England have lost at football. We were discussing this before, me and my friends here at the Leicester Square Theatre. But I think the problem with football is that there aren't enough scoring opportunities. There's a chance for a rubbish team like England to progress well, because you can just all line up in the goal like I used to when I was at school, and then no one can get the ball in. I think they've got to be extra points. That's what they should. Don't you think there should be points for, like, if you pass 10 times in a row, that's a goal. That counts as one goal. I think if you can do a keepy uppy for 30 seconds during the game, 5 points you should get for that. If you save, what about this? If you save a goal, you get a goal. I think that would be good. It would liven things up a bit. If you can just keep the ball on the centre spot for 30 seconds without it moving, 1,000 points. It'd be fun. And then the correct team would win. Or just at the end, if it's a draw right at the end, then it goes to like Eurovision, and then they vote in the countries. It would mean England would never win a football. There you go. That's the same as now. And the big news of the week, of course, Jimmy Carr has been in trouble for evading his taxes. Is that the right word for it? But it's quite interesting to me, because I think he actually, it's a satirist's job, really, is to bring down the government and expose corruption in the government. And no satirist ever fucking achieved that, ever. Spitting image just made Margaret Thatcher look more powerful and prolonged her reign by taking the piss out of her. Jimmy Carr has actually done something which might bring down a government. Admittedly, accidentally. He didn't intend to do it, but you could say he was satirically failing to pay his tax. to expose the, you know, the rotten core of our society, and he's managed to achieve something that no other comedian has managed. And the way David Cameron's all reacted, he just looks like an idiot. So he's made David Cameron look foolish for daring to have moral authority over anything. So well done to Jimmy Carr. I think if you see him in the street, bow down and maybe give him a fiver, because in the end, I think we'll get more tax as a result of coming in as a... They'll close the loophole, but I think another one might open. That's my guess. You may call me cynical, but I'm not the only one, as John Lennon failed to say. But anyway, look, I want to crack on because we've got two guests, and this could go on for hours. Literally, I might just see how I kind of have a dream of this, that we just carry on talking until someone falls asleep. Well, not in the audience, that would take me too short, but on stage. If Armando Iannucci just is kind of over and snoring, we'll end the podcast. But we've got two guests, two fantastically successful people in the world of comedy. Just doing this show has really made me feel terrible. I would say, every week I have to come in and meet people who've succeeded at my job, and I want to go, why haven't I done as well as you, you fuckers? Which I may ask them this week. I may finally break. What did you have that I didn't have, apart from talent and the ambition to do it properly? And coming up with good ideas. I've answered my own question. I don't have to ask them. But we've got two fantastic guests. I'm going to bring them out one at a time so we can give them a fantastic round of applause. Will you please welcome the man? He was that Irish bloke in Alan Partridge, remember? He was trying to give Alan Partridge. I don't know what he's been up to since then, but that was fucking brilliant. That thing he did. I don't know why he's not doing more acting. Will you please welcome Graham Linehan, ladies and gentlemen? There he is. Thank you very much. Sit down, make yourself at home. And somebody else, we got two guests. Someone else you probably know best as the script editor from Radio 4's The End of the Road Show. A show that claimed he was diphylactic. That went out on Radio 4. I don't know. We'll ask him if he is diphylactic, whether that was true or false. We can find out. He has recently been made an OBE of the British Empire. It's like the Order of the British Empire of the British Empire. So we'll have to genuflect. Will you please welcome Armando Iannucci? Yeah. Come in, sit down. Lovely to have you here, boys. So, now you are an OBE,
yeah,
Armando.
Do you know you can upgrade to CBE using British Airways Avios points?
I did not know that.
Oh, yes.
Is it you, now?
When they welcomed
me
into the establishment, they told me all these.
If I say the Queen is a fucking wanker, do you have to get me with a rapier now?
No, but I know someone who can have you executed. I've been given their personal number.
Have you? Yes. They can just step in.
In my little book that I get.
Did you have any second... When you knew you were going to get offered an OBE, did you think, I better not take that?
Or was a little bit... Is that
moment is taken up by ringing your mum.
Yes, I know, exactly. There's a bit of me that thought, oh, no, I shouldn't really. And there's another bit that just thought, this is really, really funny. And I'm afraid I went for the funny and the ringing mum to say I've got an OBE.
It was free. They give you a little medal, you know, that you can. And
I know I've got to go to Buckingham Palace to get it.
And they give you a small one as well for special occasions. I think you're not the first OBE.
Well, like a Blue Peter badge.
It's like a smaller version. Jonathan Ross, unbelievable. I couldn't believe it. Jonathan Ross has gone. Hope you wouldn't think that.
Yeah.
I mean, like, at least Armando does proper satire and stuff. He doesn't just ring up people's granddads. Say awful things. He's mainly, I don't think he's done any awful things, so he wouldn't be able to do that.
So has he got an OBE?
He's got an OBE as well, which I was gobsmacked about. I couldn't believe it. And that's, to me, slightly devalues your OBE. They've given it to Jonathan Ross.
I wonder if I can retrospectively turn it down and hope that I get something better.
Yeah. You could be a lord. If you're a lord, you get £300 a day for turning up now.
Oh, really?
They're changing it. It used to be, I saw this in the news, you get guaranteed income as a lord. Mm-hmm. It used to be about 60k, I think, a year. Mm-hmm. But now they're changing it. You get £300 every day you go in.
But only if you go in.
So if you go in, you have to go in to get your 300 quid. But I think that's... I'd do that.
Whole system's gone.
That's not too... You just have to go and sit in the House of Lords for the day.
That's right.
300 quid.
Smelling Margaret Thatcher's farts. I mean, it's just...
Does she still go? She can't go in.
She does go in.
Does she still go in?
She's occasionally there.
She can't.
Yes.
Doesn't she went down the shops to buy that about a bottle of milk? Was surprised. I think it was either her or Jennifer Saunders. I can't remember who it was. Did you see the Margaret Thatcher film?
Yes.
That's what I was referring to.
No,
I thought clever people got it.
I thought rather like Margaret Thatcher.
This is another thing I won't be able to talk about.
All right.
Do you not see it?
No.
It was... But it was like...
Let's do that for 15
Meryl
minutes.
Meryl Streep was basically doing an impression of Jennifer Saunders, I thought. It was just all the way Jennifer Saunders.
And the film, rather like Margaret Thatcher, was nuts. It was just a demented film. I didn't understand what it was about. Well, I knew what it was about, but why it was out there. I didn't know why it was out there.
I saw Prometheus.
Yes.
I can talk about Prometheus.
Okay. Let's talk about that next.
Actually, no, I haven't seen Prometheus.
Oh.
Do you know what? It's what I genuinely didn't realise when I went to see it, and I saw it quite early on. I didn't know it was anything to do with Alien.
Yeah, I
and
find
I hadn't
that
heard
extraordinary.
Anything about it. My wife said, "Let's go and see Prometheus." That's... Said, "Shall we look and see what it's about first?" She said, "No." I said, "What?"
That's quite
we
amazing.
Saw a picture of Big Head. So, I said, "I didn't really want to go. I wanted to go and see the Avengers, but
to be on the
it.
Internet,
I was watching. And we couldn't get on the internet. I was trying to look it up." And no one had mentioned it to me. And I was watching, going, "This is a bit like Alien. It's a bit too much like Alien, really." And they've kind of... And it genuinely wasn't until they... spoiler alert.
Oh, no, don't. I haven't seen it. I haven't seen it.
At the end, there's
no.
An alien.
Come on. We're still in that period where I'm allowed to say spoiler alert.
You find out how the alien was made.
No.
I'm going
to ruin your podcast.
It's about Alien. It's about the prequel to Alien. There's going to be some fucking aliens in it.
I saw it more as a prequel to Thelma and Louise.
Is he Snoop Dogg's tweet today?
No.
He just said, just watch Thelma and Louise. Bit of a tear in my eye. Snoop Dogg? I love the idea of watching it with him on a kind of girly night. Anyway, sorry.
It's all right. Sorry, but I enjoyed when in the Thatcher film, where Airy Neave got blown up. That's not what I enjoyed. I'm not saying...
Oh!
Spoiler alert.
God's sake.
Spoiler alert, he escaped from Colditz if you're going to watch that film as well. But Margaret Thatcher was there in the car park. You know, he was blown up coming out of the car park.
Going, Airy,
they
Airy.
Were both getting in their cars in the car park. Margaret Thatcher getting in the car.
Yeah.
He got blown up. She ran out and was the first on the scene.
Yeah.
I don't think that
really?
Happened. I think if Margaret Thatcher was in that car park, she fucking bolted the other way.
He got blown up and she shouted, "Airy by name, Airy by nature."
We shouldn't really have brought this up with Graham in there.
It's terrible. I got to see more films.
No, but you think the IRA bill blew him up because his name was too much like the IRA? He's called Harry.
Yeah, it can't be two. But there can only be one.
You might get to shake hands with the Queen this week. Are you not...
What's that? Is this a bit?
I'm just lumping you with all the Irish.
Are all the Irish shaking hands with the Queen?
Yes, weren't you invited?
Oh, I didn't realise, I'm sorry. I'm not my mother. I'm not like my mother is absolutely fascinated by all this stuff. She literally phones and she says, What are people talking about Charles at the moment? What's going on? She really thinks that everybody goes on the street and kind of goes, "Yes, so what's happening? Did you see that he's going to Africa next week for a few weeks?" And I think that might be a good trip for him at this stage. You know, I don't talk about him.
Well, Armando's now...
Yeah, I know.
He's an OBE. Did you get a special key to a little club you can go to where only OBEs are allowed?
No, it doesn't work like that, Richard. It's...
it should be. There's got to be some perks.
Does something happen to your name?
It's like,
oh, do we have to call you milord or milady?
No, just your grace will be fine.
Your grace.
For the purposes of this evening. No, I think I'm technically allowed to use the initials OBE at the end of my name, but obviously I'm not going to do that.
You have to do that.
There was a brilliant interview with Sir David Frost, and I think it was Lynn Truss or someone, and she said she rates people who are titled on how seriously they take their title. She said, I'll give him a 7. Because when I called him David, he didn't object. But when he picked up the phone, he said, Sir David Frost.
There are some people who absolutely... There are some actors who absolutely insist on being
Sir
called...
Sir Ben Kingsley.
Yeah. Oh, does he?
Sir Ben Kingsley. Oh, we don't want to get on the wrong side of him.
So if Cara's coming for him, you go, Ben, Sir Ben!
And Lord Alan Sugar, yes.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. Well, you don't want to. My favourite thing about Alan Sugar is, I'll go for the vernacular. But my favourite thing about him was he was on Twitter and someone said, someone corrected him in this very light way. They said, "Oh, you great Nana, you great Nana, you can't say that, you great Nana." And his reply was, "Shut up, scum." Lord Alan Sugar.
Technically, he is correct. They are to him, Armando. You can now do that as well. You can start.
I was once at a table at the BAFTAs.
Yes,
next to Alan Sugar's table, and I was watching Alan Sugar because I thought he's nothing like how he is on the telly with all that. You're fired. And I actually, this is absolutely true. Somebody came up to him and said, "Do you know where the ladies are?" And he went, "The ladies over there."
You've got a gimmick, you've got to use it. He's shrinking, his head's shrinking up a bit, though, and he's turning into a kind of frightening skeleton version of himself. What do you think? I find him slightly terrifying now.
He
can't say resume, and that is my main problem with
him. Really?
He says resume.
I do that with some words. I keep saying hyperbole. I can't get out of it. I'm usually in interviews that are going to go out, and then someone says, "Oh, can you tweet this link to the podcast you did or whatever?" And I listen to it back in hyperbole. There's a lot of hyperbole about these things, and I can't really forward that to anyone. Sorry.
It's the the hyperbole is the biggest event in the American
Exactly.
Once every 100 years,
55 baseball teams compete. On one side of the pitch, 159 American football teams on the other. They all charge at each other in the middle. And it's your 15-minute commercial for the new iPod. And that's the Hyper Bowl.
So what do you think of the Jimmy Carr tax situation, fellas?
That broke the week that every columnist was having a go at me for having an OBE. I thought, thank Christ for Jimmy Carr. More power to his elbow, I thought, you know.
Yeah, I don't know, it's kind of, you know, obviously should pay tax and stuff. But the thing is, I think he basically, didn't he say in his apology that he said... to his accountant said, "Do you want to save £2 million? And he said, "Yeah." He says, "It's completely legal." And he said, "Oh, okay, yeah." And he did that.
Yeah.
And then it's in the news. You know? And I kind of see how that might happen.
Yeah.
Because I hate all that tax bollocks as well. You know? And I do hire someone to take care of it.
Yeah.
He's a bloke. He's got a cigarette like that. You want to save someone?
He's sorted.
He's sorted. He's sorted.
He can't be traced.
He does wink a lot. He winks a lot. So.
If it's funny, it's money.
Aren't writers in Ireland tax exempt anyway? If you're a writer.
Oh yeah, no. If you're an artist, you're tax exempt.
You're not an artist.
So we went to we thought, and this is incredible, this will be on the cover of the Times. But we thought, oh, maybe we should live in Ireland, and then we won't have to pay tax. And so we went back to Ireland for 2 years, I didn't earn any money. So we came back. You know, no, but you know, there's a thing to encourage artists to live in Ireland, and And unfortunately, it's not working. I still don't want to live there.
But it's interesting, I guess, whether comedians, whether they should be held up as and satirists, which I think.
Well,
Jimmy
the interesting
Carr
thing about him, what's interesting about Jimmy Carr is by virtue of not paying his tax, he was somehow elevated into a kind of socialist worker figure. You know, Jimmy Carr isn't a left-wing politician. He comes out, he does silly one-liners. You know, but suddenly Toby Young and all these people are kind of, you know, just kind of launching themselves at him. And the left in general.
Yeah.
Jimmy Carr is not part of the left. Do you know what I mean? It was weird.
I felt aggrieved with Alistair Campbell was accusing me of betraying the principles of Malcolm Tucker.
Oh, yeah, that was great. I was so close
but
to
Malcolm
writing.
Malcolm Tucker is a dangerous so cunt.
I had my finger over the thing. And I was so close to saying, he's not a hero. I was going to say, did you see the film? He started the fucking Iraq war.
But to Alistair Campbell, he's presumably a hero because he's set quite similar.
There's all these people in life who seem to get away with the worst shit. Mm. And then they kind of go on chat shows and everyone's joking about how they serve chocolates to Jeremy Vine or whatever. And it's like, well, you know, he was responsible for the deaths of thousands and thousands of people, you know? Mm. Anyway, let's get into that now.
But you know? He would argue only once.
Oh, I could have got a real round of applause if I followed through there. I didn't do that. I must try and get on question time to learn how to follow through. Get that round of applause.
It's what every comedian and comedy person's looking for, 7 people applauding. the other 400 deciding not to join in.
Yeah, yeah.
It's sort of quite a strong statement.
But they're friends for life.
So we had Stuart Lee on last week.
Yes.
Which you both know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I wanted to ask, because you've worked with Stuart Armando. Mm-hmm. When you've worked with him, mm-hmm. has there ever been, like, sort of broken things, just things mysteriously? Has there ever been... You've just been like, I don't know if you work in a place with a kitchen, whether you've ever kind of, the next day you've gone in and all the kitchen cupboards are smashed and stuff.
Does he do that? Is that what
he's... Well, there's a mystery. Last week there was a mystery when I shared an Edinburgh flat with him, and me and him, I had slightly heated words about nothing, and then the next morning all the cupboards in the kitchen were punched in.
Really?
No one knows who did it. And I was thinking as well, last week I mentioned right at the end of the podcast that in Carpenter, where I'm living in the block of flats, the front glass got all kicked in last week as well. I should have asked you if he'd been in Harpenden recently. You know, it's who's been doing. I just wondered if things are mysteriously broken.
I tell you what, though, this leads me on to an interesting story that I can tell that you're involved in as well, which is one of the rare occasions, because it makes no sense us being on stage together. But one of the times it would have made sense about we did Armistice together, and we used to do it at the BBC, and there were little acts of vandalism that people would do, which were like Andy Riley. There were all these kind of paintings with kind of splashes of you know, kind of vaguely Jackson Pollock type things. Mm. And Andy would just draw new little bits on it.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, he'd always do it. But the other thing was, twice we were in studios, or we were in offices. Once was Big Break, you know?
Yeah.
Remember Big Break?
Jim Davidson.
and Peter Bainham, there would always be cards on the walls.
Yes.
And Peter was a master of writing things on the cards that he shouldn't. Like, all the cards would have guests of who's going to be on.
Yes.
You know, so if you Big Break, you see, you know, Bruce Forsyth or whatever, you know. And Peter wrote Vivian Westwood and slipped it in.
And the next week she was on the front.
Just one week I remember we were in the office that was used by Last of the Summer Wine. They were all out filming on the summer location shoot, and we were using their office, and all the cards were up with a breakdown of each scene within each episode. So it says, you know, Compo says there's no way you're going to get me in that contraption. And the next card said, short of Compo in that contraption. And Andy Riley took one of those cards down, and just not a new new card that just says Compo bursts puppy with cock.
No, That's not the one. I'm so happy you didn't do the one I remember.
Oh, yeah.
Because the one I remember was Compo finds body of child in burnt out car. That would have been the Christmas episode. And, you know, just leave it there and then, you know.
They actually filmed it. Yeah. But it didn't make compliance, so they cut
also,
it.
Also, Amanda, when you've worked with Stuart,
yes.
Has there ever been a point when you've maybe been nearly asleep and you've woken up to find him masturbating you with a 100-year-old ventriloquist stomach?
That's only happened twice.
Yeah, that's his signature move. He did admit to that one, at least.
Nina Conti documentary.
Yes.
Wasn't it amazing?
It was amazing. It was absolutely fantastic. She's doing an Edinburgh show. You must go and see Nina.
She's extraordinary. I made a pilot with her.
Oh, that was great. Yeah, the sitcom.
Oh, the sitcom thing.
Yeah.
And she was extraordinary because she's this fantastic... She has this monkey called Monkey. And... the pilot was, you know, it was scripted, but there was a little bit of improvisation as well. And in one of the scripted scenes, she couldn't remember her line, but the monkey reminded her. And on another scene where we were improvising, the monkey was improvising and said something that made her laugh.
Yeah.
It's extraordinary.
Yeah, see, I wouldn't mind being wanked off by a puppet held by Nina Conti. That would be all right. It's Stuart Lee. And it was a puppet that my great-granddad made. So it's an additional... He was trying to cheer me up, Armando. I was crying at the time.
How long ago was this?
I was actually weeping. It was the first year we were in Edinburgh, so it's 25 years. Okay. We're coming up to the 25th anniversary of it. Mm-hmm. I'm a bit worried about what the flashbacks may... Whether he's going to be in Edinburgh this year. Do you remember we used to sleep in Johnson Terrace? The Oxford Theatre Group that both me and Armando were different times parts of. Mm-hmm. Would hire out this...
And the Masonic Temple.
Lodge, yeah.
The Masonic Temple.
There was a Masonic Temple upstairs, and we all slept on the floor downstairs in the Masonic Lodge. And it went back years, because someone told me an awful story about Esther Ranson, something she did behind the little... You know, there was a little kitchen in there. She was doing something... I can't say what it was, but you'd have imagined something worse. So it's kind of beautiful. But she... So, like, these stories got passed down year upon year. So Esther Ranson must have been there in the 1960s, I presume.
Yeah, right.
But still, the stories of her sexual excess were passed downwards. But Esther Ranson's had sex, right? That's got to be... She's got a daughter. That must be the truth. So that's no surprise to anyone. But, yeah, we basically had to sleep on the floor, and we demarcated our little areas with tables and bits of furniture and stuff, and just slept on sleeping bags. And I was crying one night. And Stu tried to...
As you do, as a
19-year-old virgin. Yeah. Actually, I think I'd had sex once by that stage, so bad luck. One more than you, mate. So, but yeah, so it was probably my second sexual experience was Stuart Lee and a ventriloquist dummy. Right, but he doesn't do it. I just thought that's what he did. He told me he did that with everyone he worked with.
You always remember your second, if it's that.
No, never in any of my waking moments with him, no. No.
Well, just watch out. That's why I'm just... forewarned is forearmed. More ways than one. Yes. So we're talking about loads of... There's loads of stuff to talk about. It is ridiculous having both of you on. You are both...
No, we did have that early connection where we did Friday Night Armistice. Yeah.
It was the other one where we had... Do you not remember we had a sitcom race together?
Did we?
Yeah, you and Arthur were writing...
Is this a song? This is a to a song.
No.
Did we?
When we were at the... And it went something like this. You and I. No, you. We were in 33 Percy Street, the Talkback building.
Oh, yeah.
And you and Arthur were next door writing Father Ted.
Yeah.
And Steve and Peter and I were writing I'm Alan Partridge. And we realised we were next door to each other.
Right.
And we more or less started writing at the same time. So we decided to have a sitcom race to see who would get to the end of their series. I think you beat us.
Yeah.
But what was the more successful sitcom out of two?
It's not who
finishes it first. It's which sitcom is remembered 20 years later as being the best sitcom of its generation.
Well, I still get There's More to Ireland than This at every single... And I always go, yes, I wrote Father Ted.
know. But it's still, it is.
I'm not an extra.
Wherever you go. When, in fact, when I was being protested by Christians when I did Christ on a Bike, yes. occasionally Christians would turn up with placards.
Yes.
And then occasionally people would turn up with placards saying, "Down with this sort of thing," in amongst satirizing.
Really?
Yeah. I think you wrote
small
a blog
boy
about
at the back just yeah. hanging yeah. up his.
Yes. No, it's every protest now. There was yeah. there was a picture recently of some Irish fans standing in front of a kind of mass of Polish policemen, you know, with those two signs, you know. Yeah. So. And the thing is, I was the first person to tweet it. I tweeted it and I said, "Oh, you know, this is funny," you know. Yeah. And then for like literally a month, people have been, "Have you seen this?" Yeah, I was the first person to tweet that.
People keep sending me a photograph of, it's a big sort of WWF or whatever they call themselves now, wrestling association thing in America, and there's a crowd and they all have banners as well. And there's someone in the crowd who has a big placard that says "Youth Hostling with Chris Eubank."
Well, to be fair, there's one of them at every protest.
It's the new John 3:16 or whatever. It's out of prison. But now, between us, I mean, we've yes. created some of the major comedy characters.
Yes.
No. I only laugh because you were making fun of
Father
this
Ted,
at the start.
You created Malcolm Tucker, Ted and Ralph. I created Alan Partridge. As everyone knows.
Yes. I remember when you came in with that voice. And they all said, "No, that's not it. Steve, what can you do?"
We mainly do it to white, because there's this story. Occasionally you'll see a newspaper article which says, you know, Alan yeah. Partridge created by Leon Herring.
Yes.
Which all comes out from Patrick Marver saying in one of the, some books, someone's going, "I bet Leon Herring are claiming they created Alan Partridge."
Oh, really?
And the journalist saying, "No, I've never seen that claimed anywhere." But since then, me and Stu have always claimed we created Alan Partridge. After he gave us the idea.
Yeah.
But we wrote some of the first things Alan Partridge said. Yeah. And as a result, we get yes. almost 1% of everything that is made from the Alan Partridge down the, almost that much. It's a bit like the reverse Jimmy Carr. yeah, and fair enough, it's obviously, we'll go on record as saying I made that up. So, and that's not been denied, so that is now legally binding. This goes to court. This is evidence that I did create
Alan. He didn't say no.
I did create Alan.
He asked me to stab him.
And if Armando now says no, I did, then just edit that bit out, Ben. No one will know. But also we were talking with Stuart about Twitter last mm-hmm. week.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. He's
very against. Well, the thing I forgot to say to him, because he's very good at sidetracking you when you're trying to argue down. Mm-hmm. I was saying that it doesn't matter if someone mentions where you are because hardly anyone reads it. Mm-hmm. But also the main thing is, if someone mentions where you are, it doesn't matter if you're on Twitter, that will still happen.
Yeah.
So by opting out of Twitter, that doesn't stop that happening. But you're obviously a massive advocate. You're an early adopter of Twitter.
Yeah, well, I wasn't that early. I think what happened to me was Jonathan Ross outed me.
Right.
And I was just writing. I was doing that thing that everybody does when they join, which is, "Oh, I'm going to sit down now." and not really understanding why I would do this. Yeah. And then Jonathan Ross kind of outed me and said, "Are you Glinner?" And I said, "Yeah, you know." And the next thing I said, "Oh, I'd better check Twitter and see what, you know." Although that was the first time I used that term. You know, I better see what's... I'll log in or whatever to this Twitter and see what's happening. And I had 4,000 followers. And that was the moment I thought, "Oh, fuck me. If I write something in that box, 4,000 people will see it." And that was the first time I really grasped what it was. Mm-hmm. And since then, I've been... Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. Do you think it's become worse? I mean, in a way, it got to a point where it kind of expanded. When it first started, or when I first got involved with it, it felt like you could go and have a conversation with people on there and you'd get reasonable people mainly, and people weren't just tweeting, "You're a fucking cunt," and then running away. Now it seems to...
That seems to be just to you.
It might just be me. It's fair comment.
I still get very reasonable.
I just love the block button is just so... I just love it. It's like, you know... I thought you were a little bit block. Don't understand why you block. You know, I just... I find, and then people say, "Oh, off blocking people, isn't it? No, it's my, it's like my garden. Yeah. Why would I let slugs and weeds in my garden? I go over and I spray them with some sort of chemical.
Well, I like the people who decide what you're meant to be tweeting about. They get angry with you because you're tweeting a certain thing.
Yeah, yeah. Go, a guy tweeted yesterday. Unfollowing, I'm afraid. You know, I thought you'd be funny, but it's all Daily Mail obsession, you know. I'll check back in from time to time. So I retweeted that with blocked.
Although one of my favourite tweets recently someone sent me was, hey, you know, you're very funny, and Alistair Campbell is just a big smelly cock cunt. Which I thought rounded off the, intellectual debate we were having. The nature of the establishment.
If only you'd put that after the WMD and then go, plus, and by the way...
Yeah, yeah. Get a load of this guy. Will you see what this guy has to say?
I think people would have thought you won the argument, whereas at the moment I think it's pretty very even. Much in the balance.
But there was a thing, I think there was a time maybe about 2 or 3 years ago where you did feel you were having a kind of conversation with people.
Yeah.
Because it hadn't reached such a saturation point that people could read your tweets regularly. But now, because everyone follows so many people, if you tweet something, there's less of a chance that they read it, really.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
So you don't get a sense you're having that kind of direct conversation with people.
No. Yeah, I guess it's getting a bit, maybe a bit noisy, but I still like it. I think people also realise, well, it's not worth writing unless you've actually got something to say. So I tend to have good conversations with people still.
Yeah.
And the bad ones, you can just kind of scroll through, you know.
I remember when I first joined reading one of Eddie Izzard's tweets, which was one of Eddie Izzard's tweets. And the tweet was just, I'm getting out of the taxi now. And I thought, why is he saying that? And also, presumably he's kind of going... He's staggering around out of a taxi while tweeting.
It would make sense if the taxi had just been in a massive crash. And he'd been there for 6 hours.
It's a bit like that guy in the 60s who tried LSD on TV, wasn't it? Maybe it's that. Maybe he was doing some experiment where he was going to get us. But I've been living in a taxi for 3 years. And then we'll see what effect that has. I'm taking the LSD now. That's
what... Imagine if you were in a plane and they said, the pilot came on and said, I'm afraid all our engines have failed and we are going to crash and we are going to die. Would you tweet? There would be someone who would think, I must tweet about this.
I think you would. I think if I was knew I was going to die, I think I would.
Well, it's everyone's last words, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's everyone's last words. I get to the
There's a very...
Where do I begin? I'd like to thank my wife. Oh, sorry, no, it's not an award ceremony. delete.
Somebody unfollows him.
I thought I'd follow you because I thought you'd be tweeting funny things, but it all seems to be just cries of distress.
one of the saddest tweets ever is John Edwards, who was a vice presidential candidate under John Kerry, and when was running as a presidential candidate the year that Obama won. That was the year he was campaigning in New Hampshire, and then there was a sex scandal, and it was revealed he'd father a child, he'd had an affair. And his Twitter account is still open, and the last tweet he did is from 4 years ago, and it just says, I'm just on my way to see the good people of New Hampshire. And then silence.
Yes. And there'll just be one now going, it didn't go that well. Looking back, it wasn't all that great. We're talking about very clever, isn't he clever? The way he's got that round to him now, isn't he? Your latest... We scheduled this very badly for Armando Iannucci fans, because tonight on Sky Atlantic they're showing about now, they're showing an hour-long Alan Partridge episode, brand new Alan Partridge episode.
This is the place to be if you don't like Armando Iannucci.
And then they're showing the first episode of Veep, which is your new American HBO
show.
So tell us a bit about look at that. But again, That's more than Graham got, but still not the full audience. They're mainly over there,
we'll
the people who
them.
Like applauding are mainly
we'll
over
them.
Which
well
makes
done.
Me
You've
think
worked.
Both of you
well
brought,
done.
I think you've both brought your posses along with you. That's what, you both, I've imagined both of you are so successful now. You've got like Steve Wright permanent posses.
We'll have a hyperbole later on.
Who laugh and applaud every witticism you yes. make. So tell us a little bit about Veep, because that sounds exciting. And HBO as well.
It's HBO, yes. It's set in, not in the White House, just next to the White House. It's set in the Vice President's office, and Julia Louis-Dreyfus, who most people still know as Elaine from Seinfeld, plays the Vice President.
Oh, God.
I've just got you here.
You have to go on and on Graham. About your show.
I wanted to get both of you here. I want to get both of you here so you would know how it feels to be me if I'm sitting next to you.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I just thought that would be a funny thing.
I think you should do it all the way through, though. Guarantee you'll get funny again.
We've heard it all before.
How did you get to work with... I mean, HBO is just an amazing thing to work with.
They're the acme of TV production.
Transgressive television.
Yes. No, how did it happen? It was a long convoluted. I did a pilot. We did an American version. We did an American make of The Thick of It.
Yes.
For ABC television about 5 years ago, which was terrible. I mean, it was just dreadful. It was made by ABC, who are owned by Disney. So if you can imagine a Disney version, of The Thick of It.
What I think the problem with The Thick of It is the swearing should be taken out. I mean, I imagine it would be much better if there was no swearing in it.
Well, that's what happened.
It's the show for you.
And Ollie was a woman. They turned Ollie into a woman because they thought that would be more interesting and sexy.
Did Chris Addison still have to play him?
Quite enjoyed it actually. And it was just very tedious and dull. And then in the course of having those meetings in LA, I met up with HBO and really liked them. I sort of wanted to do it with HBO, but the BBC, in their infinite wisdom, and it was infinite, sold it to ABC. But then I did In the Loop, and so HBO got back in touch with me and said, that we've been wanting to do a Washington comedy for a while. How would you like to have a go? And that was it, really. Right. Just took it from there.
It's pretty good, isn't it?
It's really good.
That's as easy as that, really. That's all it takes.
Is that?
If only I thought of just them asking me. But you similarly took the IT crowd or the IT crowd.
No, it has nothing to do with you. No, I found out about that on the internet.
Oh, really?
Yeah. One day I was surfing the web, and I thought, the American version of IT Crowd is currently being filmed.
But how does that happen?
I don't know.
But how does it happen? How does it happen that they can take ABC without your...
Guess who did it? Guess who wrote it? The guys who've taken over Community.
Oh, the guy from Community's in it, isn't it? The Joe.
He was, and he was okay, and the girl was pretty good too. But they just did a carbon copy of the pilot of our show, and the only thing I would have liked to have said to someone was, don't do ours. Try and make it different. Try and make it more American.
Yeah.
You know, that might be good. And they literally had the same plot and just changed a few words so they sounded more American.
And the same camera angles, isn't it? Pretty much.
Same camera angles. They thought we did all that shit deliberately. and it was mistakes, you know? We had these crappy sets because we couldn't afford better sets because it was a pilot episode. You know, everything looked wrong and bad. And also, the pilot episode was hung in a kind of upstairs, downstairs. See, now I'm talking about my show. The pilot episode was hung in a kind of upstairs, downstairs idea, and as the series went on, I thought, well, I'm not interested in that. I just want to have funny people in a room like Seinfeld, you know. And so we ditched it. But of course, it was all over that first episode.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, this is all.
How can they do? How can that be?
Because the thing is, they have lots of money, the Americans, and therefore there's less of a need to make decisions quickly.
Yeah.
So they don't decide things. They just throw money at it.
They probably thought I would be more flattered if they just did the same show.
Yeah. I don't understand how they could do it without you knowing. That's what, as well, as what,
yeah,
I'm,
you,
what I'm...
Yeah, but I'm pretty amazed at that too.
But I found out while we were out there doing the rounds of interviews that there was someone else out there who we hadn't heard of who was also going round lots of companies going, I know this show, The Thick of It. We can get them in. We can, so was touting The Thick of It as if it was her property. And it's just America is...
I think I might try that. That's quite, that's, yeah. That seems to be the way in.
There's these two guys, Laurel and Hardy, and they are phenomenal.
They're both idiots. That's really the pitch for Laurel and Hardy, isn't it? They're both idiots. And that's the end of the pitch.
And that's how they do it. They just, you know, they just have so many resources available that it doesn't really matter.
But sure, so what? I just find that incredible that you're not in control. You're not in control of where it goes. If you've
created
it.
Well, you aren't. It just depends. You know, I think what happened was the company that did the IT Crowd also did things like, X Factor and stuff like that. And they just thought, oh, that's what we do. It's a property. We just sell it and someone else does it. They thought it was like that. Mm. And they didn't realise.
Well, I guess it's like Community itself in the, that's been taken away from the man who created it.
Yeah.
Because he's too rude.
And I think also there is a thing. I mean, maybe we're beginning to get over it now, but there is a thing. I think there's a lot of British people involved in, I don't know, in television or film or any aspect of the arts or whatever, just think that America is so fantastic and amazing.
Oh, yeah, that's my favourite thing.
They're perfect.
I love that. I love that when you see a news story and it goes, you know, it looks like The Office is going to be made in America. You know, it's like the first series of The Office is one of the greatest sitcoms of all time. Yeah. What could be better than that? You know, well, I'll tell you what, if it's done by Americans, you know, it's such a real kind of, oh, you know, we're not worthy, you know, you're so.
And it was interesting watching the sort of BBC executives out there who had been sent over from the UK and set up in LA and who were talk to you about how, you know, we're going to do this, we're going to stick to this, we're going to stick to this. And as soon as they went into a meeting with an American, they'd go...
Oh, whatever.
And it's just that, stop it. You know, we are very good. We're quite good in Britain. We're good at telling. We're good at telling.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, we don't have to do ourselves down.
Greener, one of my favourite shows is... Eastbound and Down, amazing show. And I saw him interviewed in The Guardian, and he said, well, we were going for the British model of six episodes, which we've been taught to think is a bit crap.
Yeah.
You know, there's a great joke about The Simpsons, you know. the longest running show in British sitcom history. Catch all eight episodes. But here was Danny McBride saying that by doing a shorter run, he was able to keep control over it. He was able to keep his vision intact and stuff. And so, you know, but there's this thing. There's this, you know, everybody here thinks America's great. Everyone in America think we're great. Mm. It's just ridiculous. Why can't we just be happy?
You know? But you've gone, I guess, with the IT Crowd for a more kind of a broader sitcom. It's certainly a time when
really do you think? I think it's quite subtle.
When a time when everyone else was. I mean, it kind of got really annoyingly everyone for me. Sitcoms started turning into ultra realistic to the point. Graham is doing
he's
a visual.
He's insulting you.
towards something.
Well, I shouldn't try and compete with these incredible shows that are doing really well. I should make something that doesn't look like them at all, and I'll stand out.
Yeah.
That was essentially.
But it's with a studio audience, which again, is kind of
which I like. Yeah, and people misunderstand that as well. The thing you hear the most is I don't need an audience to tell me where to laugh. Well. You know, no one does, you know. Mm. But what's kind of useful is having an audience to energise the performances and make people try and grasp those laughs by trying different things on different takes. And
also when you hear other people laugh, I think you're more inclined to laugh out louder. And it is a different feeling when you laugh out loud than when you laugh internally, I think. I think it feels more satisfying when you yourself actually make more of a noise.
I don't know. There's some shows that it works for and there's some that don't, though. You know, like Larry Sanders would have been terrible with an audience. but Seinfeld would have been awful without one. Yeah. You know, so, you know, it just depends on what kind of show it is. I personally think that very, very naturalistic shows don't benefit too much from an audience. But Alan Partridge, I guess, would be one that's kind of in the middle. Because that was quite naturalistic.
Well, then, but then we got very kind of... People got confused for the second series, which was done in front of an audience, where they thought there was a laughter track on it.
They suddenly start... And I heard people saying that, well, the first series didn't have an audience.
I'd say, it did.
And they'd go, no, it didn't.
And I said, hang on, I was there. It did. It was a real live... And you know, people get very kind of dogmatic about these things. But, I mean, it's interesting. The Alan Partridge we do now doesn't have an audience because we kind of want to make it feel a bit more, I don't know...
Very realistic.
A bit more real, I suppose, yeah.
I have to say... and I think I'm going to get the big round of applause now because I have to say I just wanted to thank Armando for bringing Alan back so brilliantly over the last few months. There you go. I think the biography, the Morning Matters, you know, what's been brilliant about recent Alan is it seems to me that you've all become kind of energized, and also Steve seems to realize that he's got one of the greatest comic characters of all time, and he shouldn't let it go so easily.
Yeah, you know? But we don't take Alan out of his box that often. You know, it was 10 years before since I'm Alan Partridge, and that was actually 6 years after the first series of it, and so he doesn't appear. And I think actually Steve has now become the age that Alan is.
Yeah, I was going to say when you see the pictures of him early on, it literally is like a 24-year-old man with a stupid grey hair in his hair, and you just go, what's going on? But now he does look.
Maybe we should do that George Lucas thing of going back to the early Alans and redigitizing them. It's like 3D Alan. God, that would be horrible.
It to America and make someone else play him. That would be...
We love your Alan Partridge. Yes. But again, there have been, you know, we do get calls every 3 years for, you know, can we do the American Alan? But you just think, but no, it's him.
Some way they do that.
And it's such a British thing, though, isn't it, Alan Partridge? I mean, it's such a, you know, Radio 2, not even Radio 2... morning TV,
that Daily Mail feel, that kind of letter writer to the Daily Mail.
Well, you know, you don't have to thank me for inventing it. To be honest, just the joy of seeing it doing so well. That's all I want from it.
That's reward in itself.
In a big way, it is. I remember I was going to talk about it because I know Armando from a long time ago because I saw we did the Oxford Review workshop together.
That's right. Jazz Cellar.
In 1987, which was actually a kind of. A lot of people started there. Stuart Lee, Al Murray, Ben Moore, Riley and Kevin Cecil, Ronnie Kevin Cecil. Lots of people started there, but you were doing a lot more performing then, which you don't seem to do so much performing. And I remember like rolling on the floor, like slightly showing off, I think, with laughter at one of your routines. So
Of capital letters?
I think it might have been. I was going to ask if you still knew any of it because like, it won't work on the podcast.
No,
I don't think.
No.
But
I did this thing called Ken Theft. He was a slightly disturbed comedian called Ken Theft.
He always had the best names.
And he always spoke in very short, clipped sentences. And I remember he did capital letters. Yeah. My impressions of capital letters for them. And I had a set of like props, like glasses and funny moustaches and hats and stuff. And I'd say, now capital letter P. And I'd turn around and put glasses on and turn around and then just make my hands in the shape of the letter P. And it would get a round of applause. And then I'd say, moving right on now, I've always wondered what capital letter Q would look like in a fire, you know. And then put more things. And then I'd get on to, now a little bit more difficult one, this one, a diphthong. For this, I require the assistance of a volunteer. And I'd get someone to lean back and be a kind of... A, the slant of an A next to an E and stuff like that. And I'd carry on.
You thinking of bringing that back?
No. No.
But you did the Alan Partridge, the mid-morning match thing via the internet with Foster's sponsoring, which also Charlie Higson, who we had on, who you know as well,
did
with the Fast Show. So do you think that's a viable way to... They're only going to bring back successful shows, presumably.
I mean, we did it because we thought that would be an interesting...
So I'm fucked, is what I'm saying.
Because that would be, we thought it would be a good way of bringing Alan back, and it would sort of slightly sneak him in under the wire, in that we're not going big, we're not saying it's a whole new series on the telly. It would allow us to try something out. We wanted it to be good, so we wanted to, you know, really put an effort into it. And Foster's paid for it to happen, so they paid for the studios and the budget and everything. I suppose, you know, if we were unknowns and this was an unknown character, I can't imagine that would have happened. But it's just interesting you can now do that, and as a result, you know, it got an audience, and it's now going to be shown again on Sky Atlantic. We'll bring out DVD and stuff like that. But it kind of shows you that it was just the first indication I got that actually you might not need channels and schedules and channel commissioners.
But do you even need the sponsor? You know? I mean, do you seriously even need the sponsor? I know you have to pay for it all to be made, but that can't be... for something that's set in one location like that, it can't be a massive amount of money.
No, it's not an expensive thing to make.
So you could actually... You get to a point, which I think was with the internet, where obviously I'm doing rubbish stuff like this on in front of some nerds. But, you know, if I had say, Jimmy Carr's money...
Or accountant.
Even if I just had the tax he actually paid, I would be able to...
We'd all like that.
Actually, be able to just—you can just make your own show. Because I worked with—I worked on the third series. Some would say the most successful series of Little Britain, as the script editor.
Yes,
should have been a bit. Had got the red pen out a little bit more, but. you know, on paper that ting tong didn't look so bad. Until you actually saw it. I didn't realise what they were going to do. Well, I had nothing to do with it, but they were being, you know, the BBC would, there'd been a meeting, they said, we want to do this, and the BBC say, no, you can't do that, it's too offensive. And you're kind of thinking, you Wally and St. Lucas, what the fuck are you know, why don't you just, you've got enough money now, just go and make this yourself and sell it back to the BBC, put it on the internet and then sell it to people.
Well, that's still happening.
Wait a sec, the BBC said to Matt and David that something was too offensive.
Yeah. Some stuff got cut out. I wish I could remember. There it was something about
talking fannies.
No, that would have been all right. It was something about it was something about Islam.
I think. Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So if any, I've got a lot of fans in Al-Qaeda. If you are listening. They were going to say something really horrible about you, so you should blow them up anyway.
But the thing is, to go back to your point, there is no foot in the door anymore, really. Is that I think that's kind of another aspect to all this, that the foot in the door is a kind of old-fashioned concept. Mm. The foot in the door is basically just, you know, you just do your stuff and you put it online and that's your foot in the door, you know? The big mistake that I think I see people making is people will send me a really funny video. And it'll, you know, it's just brilliant. Best thing I've ever seen. Oh, I'll have a look at the rest of their videos, you know. And it's like 20 videos and they're all terrible.
Yeah.
And it's like, you don't have to put them online.
If you just put
that one on, people will think you're a genius. That's what I do, you know. I've got acres of shit on the floor. Not literally. But like, it's like, you know, just lots of stuff that doesn't go anywhere because it's not very good.
But it is hard to...
I don't post it up online and go, wait, is it this? Thought of this morning. It's really bad, but I'm going
to... It's hard to appreciate that, though, isn't it? I think, like, when we did Student Review, I think we probably thought, oh, this sketch is amazing, you know, and if we did film some of them, and there is a video of some of them that exists, which I wouldn't, you know...
But if you have that person inside your head... If you have that person that says, ooh, I won't put that one up online, then you're already further ahead than a lot of other people. Do you know what I mean?
But that comes with experience, though, I think, as well, to know which stuff isn't. You know, I think when you start off, you're so full of excitement and ebullience that you just want to put everything out and let everyone see everything.
But this stuff is out there for years.
I know, it's never...
I think there comes to the stage where you go, you know what, let's take off that sketch with us, just crying over a toilet. I don't think it's that funny.
saying those anti-Islamic things.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe take that off the site, you know.
But it doesn't. I mean, you were talking about the Little Britain getting notes even in the third series. But that still continues. Part of the reason that the Mid Morning Matters is up on Sky Atlantic is when we went to the BBC with it, they said, we're not sure. Could we take it outside the radio station? Open it up a bit? And we just thought, but that is against the spirit of the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yes, but you didn't need them particularly for that. I mean, I can understand why they'd give that note, because they're trying to hit the same kind of audience as they had for series one of Partridge stuff. Yeah. So I can understand that to some extent, but, you know...
But that's it. That's what I'm saying. You don't have to, if you make it yourself, you don't have to go through all that rubbish.
But I quite like, I have a theory about Seinfeld that I think the reason Seinfeld's so good is because Larry David had to jump through so many hoops created by NBC. NBC would say, yeah, can you do it? You know, can you not mention the word masturbation?
Yeah.
So you get a whole episode full of brilliant euphemisms for masturbation.
Yes, that's true.
Whereas
yes.
on Curb, he doesn't have to do that. And, you know, you'll just see him in his room masturbating. And it's just not quite as clever for me. You know? So it's like cigarette advertising in the 70s. You know, before the 70s, cigarette advertising was just people go... And that was the ad, you know, Rothman's, you know. And then the 70s came along and they said you can't show people smoking. And suddenly ads got really weird and fun and enjoyable and artistic, you know. Yeah. It's like that. If there's a few little impediments in the way, it sometimes helps the
work. No, definitely,
work.
That's true. I mean, I found that when I did As It Occurs to Me, which was my sketch show I did here, that you know, having the freedom to do anything you wanted without anyone telling you what to do, for a couple of weeks you go crazy and then you go... Actually, it's not any fun if someone's telling you you can't do it. So you kind of
often it's you know, people will come and they'll say, they'll give you the wrong note. They'll say, "Ooh, could you take it outside?" But what they really mean is, I didn't like the start. The first 5 minutes is not enough jokes, which is something you change anyway. And do you know what I mean?
You might have just insulted someone, Armando, and they say, "Can we take this outside?" That might might be all it was. There's a question I have to ask you both before I forget. I'm asking all of my guests this, and I'm going to ask you first, Graham.
Okay.
But everyone has been asked. I forgot to ask Jonathan Ross, so you'll be the first OBE to be asked this question.
Excellent.
Have you ever tried to suck your own cock, Graham?
I'm sure I kind of, but I gave up very quickly. I'm sure.
Once you'd ejaculated in China.
The sheer effort was enjoyable enough. No, I don't think I ever really. I can't. That's fine.
Armando,
I'll cross that off the bucket list.
No, I've never tried. No. Although I recently realised
I definitely could.
That I'm, I recently realised that I might be able to. because. I used to have a terrible back, you see, and everyone had said, oh, you must take up Pilates. So I've been doing Pilates for the last couple of years. And it does mean you can get terribly... this will work in the podcast, but I'll show this.
Oh,
I'll show this to
anyone. Oh, wow.
He's going to do it. He's going to suck his own cock.
No. It's not that big.
So you do get very flexible, and you do find when you're doing...
Nucci is sucking his own cock now. He has the ending,
but it has a ventriloquist dummy on it.
Yeah.
But when you do Pilates, you are on various racks and tables, and you end up bent over yourself and
so you end up sucking.
And you just think, oh, there's my penis.
So it did strike me that, you know,
I came in to cure a little lower back problem. And who's this? Hello.
It's Captain Lumber.
It's a surprisingly good question, that one, isn't it? I'm not going to do it again, that's it. It's just for this series, but there we go. We have discovered that. I've got a question for both of you as well. John Milton was of the Devil's Party without even knowing it. Discuss. I think Armando might do better at this than Graham. It's just my guess. Armando, you did a PhD, an unfinished PhD.
Paradise Lost. And then I did a documentary about Paradise Lost.
I read Red Dragon.
But he is, isn't he? John Milton, he's trying to make out God's good, but the devil...
But in fact, you can see he's utterly fascinated by Satan. Yeah. And Satan...
Besotted.
He makes the devil look cool, because he's thinking, well, the devil... is fighting against this impossible odds.
Yes.
It's probably like some kind of comic that you would refer to. But he keeps on fighting even though he's going to lose.
Yes, and there's something slightly... there's something very charismatic about the devil, about Satan, yeah, in Paradise Lost. There's something very heroic and noble. And also, John Milton was a Republican, and he was actually Cromwell's... He was called something like the chief secretary, but he was basically Cromwell's spin doctor in that he had to write defences of Cromwell's actions to opposition from Europe. So he had to basically spin the Republic. And then...
Not as good as the suck your own cock question, was it? It wasn't as good.
I'm dying to know what Jonathan Ross's answer was.
Yeah. Well, you know, he tweeted me, he direct messaged me when I said, yeah, I forgot to ask you this, and he said that he'd never tried, but he's sure that he could, I think, was something. But apparently, he's got, but in a subsequent...
I meant to the Milton question.
Oh, sorry.
His take on the,
sorry, I was back on the cocks. He said he thought that the devil could suck his own cock. So he's only in destroying find IEs.
Pardon?
I'm just quoting Milton Satan to you. I did it for A-level, so I can... I reckon I know as much about you as you do about it, except that I've said everything I know about
it.
Well,
I know that the opening two lines to Paradise Lost of Man's First Disobedience and the Fruit of That Forbidden Tree have the exact same rhythm scheme to the theme tune to the Flintstones. Of Man's First Disobedience and the Fruit of That Forbidden Tree.
There you go. I knew we'd get there. I knew there'd be something in
John Milton. That's why you've got the OB.
Why did you gave up, though? You didn't finish your PhD?
No, I didn't. No, because I was too busy doing comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gets in the
doing
way.
Capital letters. And
do you think that's all? Because, again, two very intelligent guests working in stupid sitcoms, writing people, things about people getting stuck in chocolate machines. And you could be doing amazing things with your lives.
But we are, Richard.
No, you're not.
We are.
You're not. You're wasting intelligence. You could be sitting in an ivory tower somewhere, spouting about John Milton,
yeah,
trying to suck your own cock. No one would mind.
That really isn't that different from what's happening there. Except I've got Twitter as well.
Did you went straight into music journalism from school? Did you go to university as well?
I had a brief period at a communications college that people went to if they didn't get any good marks,
right.
And I went to that for a while. In fact, I was sitting in the reception for my interview and I was just waiting, and I had a big folder full of my... I wrote short stories and stuff like that, and film reviews and stuff, you know, and there was a person next to me, and they leaned over, and they said, can I ask you a question? And I said, yeah, yeah. And this person was going in for the same interview, and she said, what's communications? And she got it.
Only because you told her the answer, though. Imagine she got it.
So that's the college I went to.
And then, but you got into music journalism.
Yeah.
Again, and that's why you left. Is that why you left?
Yeah, yeah. I thought, I'm going to make some money now in music journalism. And that didn't go so well.
And who did you write? Do you write for Select?
I wrote for a magazine in Ireland called Hot Press, and then Select magazine over here for a while.
That's right, I remember that.
So... people sometimes put up my reviews online. Oh, I found all your reviews online. And I'm like, oh, that's very interesting. Thanks very much. And I never retweet them. You know, it's just so embarrassing. I mean, you know, I guess it's worse for young people now who all the silly things they wrote in blogs and stuff are there forever.
Yeah.
And, you know,
yeah.
But... but, you know, I guess I suppose we're all just going to have to get over being embarrassed about it. You know?
That's what I've done. And I've made a living out of just saying the things you're not meant to say about yourself.
Reach a point where we're just not embarrassed anymore.
Well, like, someone said about... remember Anthony... Is it Anthony Weiner? Is that his name?
Oh, that congressman.
The
humorously
named congressman who showed... who
tweeted a photo of his dick.
Yes, he sent it... Who could know that sending a photo of your penis to a blackjack dealer would result in any trouble? But someone pointed out, I think it was Dan Savage, who's this very good writer on sex in the AV Club in The Onion. Mm-hmm. He said, you know, in 10 years, everyone's penis is going to be on the internet. So
catalogue, you know. Just look up before you. I mean, yeah.
So you know, there is going to come a point where people just won't be embarrassed. People are just going to, well, you know, so what, you know, because everyone's going to.
I generally think that does work. That does happen. In the 1980s or 1990s, if you're doing something even mildly perverse as a young man, you know, you're thinking, oh my god, I'm doing this awful, terrible thing. I find this thing attractive, and then the internet arrives, and you suddenly go. There is a lot of worse people than me, and everyone else does this as well. Yeah, so it suddenly makes it.
There's a forum about it.
I can Who speak can to suck their own face.
Yeah. But it's good, isn't it? That's good.
Yeah, I think it is good.
You know, less shame, less...
But I think that's... A lot of the stuff I do is about just admitting stuff or talking about...
Oh, yeah, you're fucked.
But I am. But by doing that, you know, once you... But you're not, because once you've admitted everything, there's very little I have left held back. There's some things I can't, you know, talk about for fear of prosecution. But, but you know, once you've talked about it, then there's no one can get you, can they? They can't then suddenly go, oh, huh, you did that. And go, yeah, I did do that.
But that's what's going to be like for everybody, I think.
That's been the undoing, I think, of the whole News International. In that, people had to go at the celebrities for thinking that it was all about their ego and why should we worry about the celebrities and the way they're being attacked. But because they actually were quite happy to say, yeah, we did all that stuff. We're just annoyed that they hacked into our phone.
That's why I love Steve.
That away.
That's why I love Steve as a spokesman for it, because Steve has been a bit of a naughty boy from time to time. But and someone was talking to me and they said, well, I just wish it wasn't Steve Coogan because he's done all these things. And I thought, no, he's perfect because it's no one's fucking business. Yeah, you know, so he's a perfect person. You know, the worse the better. The worse your behaviour, the better, because anything that goes on behind closed doors is no one's business. You know, it's just weird. Everybody's been under like this kind of hypnotic spell.
Yes,
that where everyone's kind of agreed. Oh yeah, if you're famous, it doesn't matter. My favourite example is that woman from the Iceland ads. What's her name? Carrie Katona. Yeah, right. Who is photographed in her own bathroom taking cocaine. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And at the time, everybody saw it and thought, oh my God, she's a mother. No one had that thought of, how was this photograph taken? You know? And suddenly now we've all woken up from this kind of magic spell that Murdoch was able to cast that, oh no, that's allowed, that's okay, don't worry about that, that's all right.
You know? I'm actually intrigued as to how people got hold of Jimmy Carr's income tax details.
I think that there was a pretty good piece of journalism. I don't think there was anything totally untoward about that.
Oh, well, you can presumably just have, you can look into, they're all, you can just go to company's house and look into those things.
Right. Yeah, and I don't think it was one of those things that you can say, oh, no, it was proper journalism there, I think. Sorry, Jimmy, but I think it was, unfortunately.
So today on Twitter, Jim Davidson has told... is following me. I'm following him as well. Mm. And he said that he's doing that because I'm very funny.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
I feel the same way about Brendan O'Carroll.
I decided to give up comedy. Who's your... Have you got any unexpected fans of your work that you've bumped into who you were surprised to find out liked you?
Oh, God. Heavens. I can't remember. Yeah, there's been a couple of people that... I'll tell you who got... Well, one thing that was nice, I'm a big fan of the band Field Music, Sheffield band.
Oh, yeah.
I think they're Sheffield, aren't they?
Newcastle.
Sorry, Newcastle, aren't they?
This is like Wikipedia, this audience.
It's the internet. It's the internet.
They'll give you anything you don't know.
And
he could be lying.
I spent a day kind of just listening to them at home while I was writing and also tweeting the songs I liked. And after a while, Michael J. McKean, who's the lead singer of Spinal Tap, wrote back and said, those guys are great. And,
oh, very good.
You know, create a little Field Music fan in Michael
Jackson. That's just
McKean.
Showing off. That's not Jim Davids, isn't it?
I
ruined it by saying, oh, I love Spinal Tap.
I did once get a tweet from Richard Dreyfuss saying, is there going to be another series of Alan Partridge? And I said, yeah, we're just doing a special at the moment. And he just tweeted back saying, oh, great, cool, thanks.
Yeah.
I never heard from him again.
And I got Alan, what's that guy? What's his name? Who wrote Mary Tyler Moore Show? James L. Brooks. L. Brooks occasionally writes to me, which is wonderful. Yeah.
You should have asked him about Mr. Holland's Opus. James Dreyfuss, my favourite James Dreyfuss.
Yeah, I will be unfollowing because of the film.
You've got to check out Mr. Holland's Opus. Slightly creepy.
Mr. Holland's Opus is. I love that film because it's got that thing that every inspirational school teacher film has to have, which is there's a big concert at the end, and then you cut to someone with a violin going, and then there's a guy with an electric guitar. Oh, I love that. It's in every. I'll tell you who did it as well. Jimmy McGovern did the exact same thing.
Right.
You know, big concert. And it's like anything about inspirational kids. They all end with a concert where someone plays an electric guitar, and you're supposed to lose your shit over it.
It's very, very moving. It's like Goodbye, Mr. Chips, but he has sex with one of the pupils. I don't think he does, but does he fall? I can't remember. I'm in love with these. I mean, it's only in that. I'm not saying Richard Dreyfuss did that.
I'll tweet him now.
Are we stretching your patience, by the way?
Yeah, that's the idea. Right, okay. We keep going. We're an hour and 15 minutes in, which is pretty good to get to this point.
What's the longest you've done?
I think we've done about 90 minutes, but usually it's about the hour point. Everyone goes a bit quiet and starts to cry. Yeah. It's like Stockholm Syndrome, though. Then they get over it and then they become more flexible. They trap us in a room long enough.
Yeah.
The way I figure it is, it's not really for these people here who've paid to see it, it's for the idiots at home who can't be bothered to spend a penny on it.
We were all watching Veep.
Whereas we are going to kill you one by one until our demands are met.
We'll end soon. I've forgotten to... probably quite...
I'm just thinking about what you were saying about football earlier. Which is, instead
something
of penalties...
I know something about, thank God.
Instead of penalties, if everyone did a party piece, I thought might be quite a good way of deciding it.
And what, the crowd decides which was the best?
Yeah. If all the players, and indeed the manager, because Roy Hodgson, he speaks five languages, so that would be, you'd get points for that, surely.
And what, the crowd had to be promised not to be partisan in their judging.
Yes.
We promised to vote for whoever was best.
Yeah.
That'd be nice. Did you know, there's a great photo of the French, the Italians taking the penalty today, and behind the goal, a guy in a big green wig had got his cock out. Right behind, which I presume was an attempt to put him off. Which I really imagined that. Just he was running up to take it. And he just went. I think it was the decisive penalty.
It would have to be pretty big to register. to register enough to make you miss a penalty. It'd have to be like one of those giant hands they have.
But Griffith was the goalkeeper.
Yeah.
Because it's all about distracting them as they run.
He just gets his.
The urge to hit it right at the cock would be so overpowering.
He dived left, but his cock went right and managed to get it.
And you've been writing a West End play, The Lady Killers.
Yes.
Which has done very well. It's done all right.
Okay.
I don't want to step on your toes, but I've got some ideas how you could improve it.
Okay.
Get it more popular.
Yeah.
Why don't you write it again, but put a Shrek in it?
Put a Shrek in it?
Because
I do like a Shrek.
The same. They love Shrek. He's a very popular character.
I prefer it when you say a Shrek. That's funny. Put a Shrek in it.
That is my solution. Matilda to mention.
That was
a
Shrek
in it. Put a Shrek in it.
Veep. What about Veep? Put a Shrek in it.
Fucking Shrek. isn't the most annoying thing about Shrek the way everyone thinks Mike Myers' accent is good?
Yeah.
Oh, he came in and he did this accent, and we thought, we gotta go with that. It's like, no. Wait, move on from there. Anyway.
It could be the new Jump to Shark, couldn't it, for a sitcom?
They
put a Shrek in.
Shrek in it.
Shrek went down very quickly.
In the American office, the new boss is a Shrek.
Hello. But it's never referred to. No one else.
But it's played by Mike Myers, because that's all he can do now.
Well, we may be getting towards the end of the podcast in the next half an hour or so. So is there any question, Armando Iannucci, you would always like to have asked Graham Linehan?
Well, what he doesn't know is that we cast him and Arthur in the Irish edition of I, Man, Partridge just to slow you down in your in your sitcom writing.
Yeah,
it was a diversion. And it didn't work.
No. I don't have a follow-up joke, sorry.
But that got a bigger laugh than the actual anecdote. So,
as I knew it would.
Building all the time. It's like a Stuart Lee routine.
But with a Shrek in it.
Boy, Shrek in it. I could change from put a sock in it. We could change the phrase.
Oh, put Shrek in it. Leave it out. Put a Shrek in it.
It'll be all over EastEnders next year. I saw an EastEnders fruit machine once, and and when it was left idle, when no one was using it, it just used to occasionally go, "Oh, leave it out." Just used to come out with like random phrases. Really funny. You and whose army?
The idea of an EastEnders
fruit. It's over!
An EastEnders fruit machine. Like, yeah, I want to gamble but be slightly miserable. I want to get the misery in as I'm gambling. This is a quote from you, Armando Iannucci. Mm. I'll be voting Lib Dem this election because they represent the best chance in a lifetime to make lasting and fair change to how the UK is governed. Is that why you got the OBE?
From Nick Clegg's office.
Do you still stand by that? Not at all.
I stand so far away from that that I'm not even in Australia, I'm in New Zealand.
But we do keep getting fooled. That's something I remember watching the Blair win.
Yeah,
and just the feeling of, oh, wow, you know. And
it's all going to change for the better forever.
It's all going to be great. Things are going to get better. Going to get better. You know. Oh, Iraq. Oh. Mass murder. It'd
be funny if the Lib Dems campaign slogan theme for like the next election was Abide With Me.
I love the way we're all in this together has become such a poisonous term for the Tories. It's supposed to mean everyone, you know, we're all in this together. But now it means like five people are all in this together. You know, Murdoch, Jack the Ripper.
Peter Sutcliffe.
You know, Richard.
And Armando. Are you diphylactic, as the end of the roadshow credits claimed?
No, I remember that. What does diphylactic mean?
Well, if you don't know that, I don't think you should be...
You can tuck your own cock.
No, what? It means you have two penises.
Two penises?
Yes!
No.
Just got one.
One for easy sucking, one down there. A shoulder one for easy sucking.
I'm a one penis a day man.
What, you change it every day? Snap on.
I'll do an impression of this. Won't work in the podcast, but this is me swinging my shoulder penis up for a suck. That's good, isn't it?
Yeah, that's good.
Come on,
you can do it.
Come on. Yes. Question time. Here I come.
There's no Tim Minchin miming having sex with his own anal prolapse, though. It's only the second best mime of the series, a sex-based rhyme. My favourite thing that I remember about you, Armando, is when you were producing A Weekending, which was nice for us because you employed me and Stu.
I remember you wrote about 60%.
We did, but there was about the time before when Diane Macias was producing. Mm-hmm. We got one sketch on in 8 weeks of 20 seconds long, so it was quite a relief to be able to eat some food when you were producing. But you came in one day and you said, "I've just been to the cinema. I went to see this film. It's good. It's called Goodfellas." It's the best thing you've ever done.
Oh, I've changed. I remember you and Stuart wrote this sketch called "The All New Adventures of the Birmingham Six."
Did it get on?
Yes.
We used to,
the Birmingham Six. They just went on these adventures. Helping people, and they all had Irish accents, and it was just every week. I got so many letters from most of them just saying, "What is the satirical?" And I just thought it just made me laugh. It was just the all new adventures of the Birmingham Six.
the all new. Let's forget about the old adventures. Yeah, they may or may not have.
They've moved on since then.
We're all acquitted anyway. So
we used to have one that we used to slip in with when we did Smith and Jones. We'd slip in a fake sketch because after a while we were quite confident. And it was one, the one was called Penis Beard, and the whole idea was that the pubic hair grew under the penis rather than over it. And people would say, don't really get penis beard. I said, really? I think that's a winner. That was literally the only joke. Penis grows under. That doesn't happen.
When we were writing Weekending, there was a producer called Bill Dare, who's gone on to fantastic success, but we wrote a sketch for him called Bill Dare's Bottom. But it was just a sketch about Bill Dare's bottom. But we kept on submitting it in the hope it would get in. It was unlikely to get in.
Yeah.
But we did it anyway. So, fuck it. Probably done. I'm bored. Probably done enough.
Richard's fallen asleep.
Do you remember the bit where I'm seeing myself as the kind of bagpuss of this interview process? When I fall asleep, everyone else falls asleep as well. Stuart Lee, we last week was talking about when we fell out slightly over on the hour, I suppose, for various reasons. But that you were on a plane. Do you remember being on a plane with him? And he doesn't remember this either.
On a plane with him?
We were on a plane going to Glasgow or somewhere to do...
A plane to Glasgow?
To do something like... we were doing Fist of Fun or something. Lionel Nimrod, which used to be him.
Oh, yes.
And we were flying in. There was very bad turbulence.
Yes.
And Stu turned to you and said, oh, look, it doesn't really matter about all that stuff, does it? Do you remember this happening?
He thought he
was about to die, but he doesn't remember it. But it's in a book. So it's when he read that he realised he could probably work with you again. But it took him 20 years to realise that you'd been made it. Do you not remember it?
No.
So how's this story? I do remember it, but I have never told anyone that story.
But I just think most things are not real. That's the thing. If you question anything, you discover it's just there's discrepancies.
Yeah. Well, memory's very unreliable as well.
It is unreliable. I can't remember why I said yes to this.
No, I can't. I'm sometimes not even certain I did invent Alan Partridge.
Sorry, I was just pretending.
Sometimes I think. Well, it seems odd that I invented it, but I have no say. But having then talked to you about it, then that just happens that you invent something, then someone else just takes it and does what they want with it. And on that note...
No. On that bombshell.
I hate the fact that I have to explain to my kids, who love Top Gear, that Jeremy Clarkson didn't come up with that catchphrase on that bombshell. It just... I despise the way... that has happened, that the world is like that. More than the Iraq war. More than the collapse of the euro. The fact that Jeremy Clarkson somehow gets credit from my children.
But when you show kids things, like if they're, my kids are 5 and 7, and you show them things, like I showed them The Artist the other day, and it has a bit where a dog comes and barks for a policeman and to follow him. And this woman goes, he wants you to follow him. And the policeman goes, really? It's just a brilliant joke based on the convention of following. But my kids were just like, follow him! They didn't see, there's a whole kind of history behind that joke and stuff, you know. They just see things. Yeah. So they're getting all this Simpsons stuff and they don't realise the references. And so it's just a bunch of shit that happens, which is how they described it to me once.
They see Simpsons as a documentary.
Yeah.
Well, I'm watching The Twilight Zone from the beginning at the moment. It's amazing how many episodes of The Twilight Zone are just in The Simpsons. You don't necessarily realise. I've just watched one which I did know, the How to Serve Humans.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. Well, I quite enjoyed this one. I occasionally talk about The Twilight Zone. I quite enjoyed it because basically there's an alien comes to Earth. He's got a big head. He looks like he's really tall. And he says, here's all these stuff we're going to give you because we love you and we want world peace. And he has a book with him, but then he leaves the book on the table, which I would say was a mistake. It was a foolish error of the man to leave. And they take this book and they're trying to translate it. And they manage to translate the cover, which is How to Serve Humans.
It's called To Serve
Humans.
So they think it's a good thing.
Yeah, but how does someone who's a cryptologist translate a 3-word thing in an alien language... But just 3, they can only translate the 3 words on the front and nothing else. How would you manage to work out that those symbols meant to serve humans?
The first word looks like two.
And then the excuse is when she finally works out, and this is the spoiler alert, everyone. Yeah. It's a cookbook.
I left the cookbook there.
She works out. She says, "Oh, we couldn't do it because the front was in capitals and the inside's in small letters." But you wouldn't be able to translate three words of a language you knew nothing about. That's not enough letters, even for a cryptologist. But the Simpsons were very funny when they were going how to cook for humans, how to cook 40 humans, how to cook.
Right.
You know. It's good.
It's good. It's a good out.
Might just talk
good
about,
out for the podcast.
Talk about what. Isn't
the internet wonderful?
I think it's good to leave it. Leave it just dying gradually. Let's see if we can build it up. No, let's just let it die. So, not going to do a competition.
Questions from the audience.
Not going to do a competition. This is a team. We can do if you like. There we go. You do understand it'll make it longer.
Yeah, someone said no.
Can we have the house lights up a little bit so we can see the hideous faces of the trolls that enjoy this?
General knowledge questions are always good as well.
There's
actually
a man coming for you. It's the nope. Mark Chapman moment for Armando Iannucci. That would be a fucking brilliant way to end. And how ironic if, you know, you got actually murdered at the end of my chat show. It would be very like something happened.
I sat in this audience thinking that I'd hear a few amusing stories. I think I'm going to leave.
It's the only way to make it stop is to kill us. That is the only way. Has anyone a question? Put your hand up and I'll have to repeat the question. I saw this hand first. What is your question, sir? I'm assuming it might be a lady, but it's a long way back. The fact you said what in a very high voice is not, does not.
I've got a question for Graham. As a person with a strong opinion about computer game stories, have you ever wanted to write
Let me repeat the question for the people at home. As someone with strong opinions about computer games, have you ever, I'm glad we turned this over to the audience. Have you ever, now it's going to get interesting. Have you ever,
have you ever
wanted to write a computer game?
I've done
game?
One. I did a bit of work on Little Big Planet 2. Just a little tiny bit of script editing, and I don't even know whether they used it because they haven't sent me the game. And I refuse to buy it.
And presumably you then have to play the game to get to the bit that you wrote anyway. You wouldn't be able to jump.
Yeah, yeah. There was more of a general idea about the structure of storytelling stuff that they may not have. See, the thing with computer games is they think they can bring you in and you'll write a few gags and but you can't really do that because the worlds are so weird. There's nothing to hang on to tell the gags. You know what I mean? So you have to be involved at a very early stage if you're going to make your mark. Although Alex Garland, who did The Beach and 24 Hours Later, he did Enslaved, and it really, really shows. It's brilliant, you know, brilliantly written.
If I leave you the keys, will you lock up?
The people at home can always just turn off whenever they want. That's the thing; they don't have to listen
to. That's a good spot.
And the thing is, you know, we can do.
I don't understand though, people my generation who don't play games. What were you doing when you were a teenager?
I played Football Manager 2. Yeah. I liked Civilization. That brilliant Civilization 2. There was that brilliant story.
That guy,
recently. Still playing. He's playing a Civilization 2. He's been playing for 10 years, and basically it's turned into 1984. It's just three.
They're perpetually at war,
bombing each other with nuclear bombs. Spies coming in, blowing. They can never clean up in time.
Yeah.
So it's just living this kind of hellish life. But he's literally—it's not like 10 years of the game. He's been playing the game for 10 years. He's gotten to this point where he's at stalemate and not thought, "Oh, I'll stop. I'll start a new game." So no, I'm going to see this through to the end. See if I can turn this around. Every time he makes peace with the Vikings.
Yeah,
they start fucking, fighting it.
Yeah, they stab him in the back.
It is frustrating.
Vikings.
So I know a little bit about. I prefer Yahtzee and stuff like that is what I like to play. Monopoly. I'm
it's
obsessed.
A solid
with,
game.
I'm obsessed with playing Monopoly against three pretend computer opponents. One, and I always put the penguin in. I fucking hate the penguin.
The penguin.
There's a penguin
in it.
It's like a Monopoly world. There's all different like counters. They're different than.
How
the
did
ones.
I forget there was a penguin?
No, there isn't in the game. No. It's in the video game. But I hate the penguin, and sometimes he beats me, but not very often. You just got to go for the orange ones.
It's really
orange
it's a real kick in the balls to know that a penguin is better at economic decisions.
You know, it's more of a kick in the balls.
That's why I have an
account. It's not even a real penguin. That's what that's. Anyone else got a question? not about video games. Andy McH, well, you've been a loyal supporter of my podcast, and his return, you get to ask a question. Don't mess it up. What is your question?
It's another question for Graham.
It's another question for Graham. So looks like Graham's more popular with the audience than Armando.
So far, yeah.
So far, it's embarrassing if Armando doesn't get a question.
That's why I opened it up. These look like my kind of people.
The question is, have you tried turning it on and off again? I'm getting you out of here. You know what I
mean? I'm just wondering if you think more people on Twitter should post pictures of themselves in the toilet.
Oh, yeah,
should
yeah.
More people on Twitter post pictures of themselves on the toilet?
Yeah, no, I did. Do you know this? Did you see this? I recently saw a headline, the Huffington Post, that said, is this picture of Kim Kardashian too sexy? So I deleted the link and replaced it with a picture of myself straining on the toilet. Quite naked. And I showed it, my wife took it, you know, and we were in the room and I said, really, this is going to be online forever. And she was like, please do it, please do it. She literally said, I'll have sex with you all the time. And so I posted it, and it hasn't, so to speak, hit me in the face again since, but yeah, it is out there. That was, I love
it. It's an interesting philosophical question whether it's possible for something to be too sexy, isn't it?
But that was the thing. I've never seen a headline designed to make men go, ooh, I don't know, could something be too sexy? It's Graham Linehan on the toilet!
But if they click on the actual thing, they go, actually, that is too sexy. That is no longer...
It's so sexy, it's no longer
sexually arousing. It's made my penis go inside.
It's given me an innie. A hard off.
There's someone right at the back. I can't see if they're even human. They could be an ape of some kind. They bought their ticket very late. They shouldn't really be rewarded. Shout out your question.
This is for Armando.
It's for Armando.
Thank you.
2-1. 2-1. He's lost. Lost on penalties.
Any chance of any more the day-to-day,
Armando? Any chances of any more... I want to ask you, is there any more chances of any more end-of-the-road shows? The four-episode-long Radio 4 series that me and Stu wrote, and someone's leaving. There we go, that's it.
You told me on Twitter to get this train, so I've got to go.
Oh, you've got to go, that's fair enough. I did tell you on Twitter you had to get that train for your restraining order. You had to be home by 11. Thanks for coming, though. It's all right, wasn't it? Did you enjoy it? Yeah, it's good. Yeah, yeah. It's all right. It was average. Good. Are there going to be any more day-to-days on that? I think the problem with... I'm going to answer this question for you, Armando.
Okay.
The problem with the day-to-day is that what has happened subsequently in the news is more ridiculous than what happened in the day-to-day. I think that what you did on the day-to-day caused that, and if you did something worse, it would just make the news even worse in the future.
It is amazing how no lessons were learned.
Well, that's the thing. They don't understand. I remember watching, not that long ago, an item on the news where they were talking about, it was the end of the space shuttle, that's right, it was the last flight of the space shuttle, and it was John Simpson was standing there in the era when newsreaders stood, which was about 4 or 5 years ago, and as he was talking about the space shuttle, a three-dimensional space shuttle came in and flew around him and then landed next to him, and I just thought,
if he got on it and kind of
waving. Him and Emily Meeklis just until the news tomorrow. Bye. And so I just, what's the point? I mean, it's what I was saying. Reality. There's...
I saw Humphreys on Mastermind, and the special subject was day to day and Brass Eye and stuff. Yeah.
Oh, really?
And the guy says, you know, he's talking about Brass Eye or something, or both of them, and he says, oh yeah, no, it's really good. It's really good. And Humphrey says, I'll have to take your word for it. It's like, oh, well, you know, it shows that you never watched it.
Well, I once was watching Mastermind.
I was once watching Mastermind and someone had chosen Alan Partridge as his. I thought, right, great, let's see if we can. And he did better than me.
I can't remember. It's because you got the question, who invented Alan Partridge? Right? Let's have. We should end it there because that was brilliant. But let's have one more question. Let's see if we can carry on so long that everyone's left.
No, no.
You're it's a lot of doing penalties.
Go
at
out
end,
and a round of applause. Go out and something big.
Well, we will. We'll let's see if
song.
We can do it.
Let's do that song we were going to do. Actually, I went to see Bob Hope live, and sorry, my last story. But it was when he was really old, and right. He should not have been touring, and he was on with his wife, and his wife did that thing where she said, Bob, do you remember that song we used to sing? The old song about you know, promises that were made and things like that. And Bob says, who are we doing tomorrow? Is it ABC or NBC? And she says, no, Bob, we're on stage at the Royal Albert Hall. Is it NBC or ABC? It was so sad. But it was one of those things where it was so bad that we really got the giggles. We had to watch it. And in the end, it was a good show because we laughed a lot. This is how he danced at one point. He couldn't stand up. It was terrible. Who's bringing him out on tour? The thing that made us really laugh was picturing the manager, this kind of guy with an eye patch. You know? Yeah, he's fine. Yeah. Who are we doing now? We're on stage at the Royal Albert Hall. At one point, he wandered. He did this. He went like this. And the band leader went, oh, shit, and kind of got him and pulled him back. It was amazing. It was well worth the 50 quid.
If only you'd applauded there, we could have ended. I thought it was good enough. I thought it was good enough. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
To my guests, Amanda Unici, Graham Lennon, thank you very much. See you next time. We'll be back in the autumn with some more. Thank you. Come on. You have been listening to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. It was all right, wasn't it? Thank you. Thanks to my guests, Graham Lennon and Armando Giannucci. It was produced by Ben Walker. The music is by Pest. It's thanks very much to Mark Orange Mark at the British Comedy Guide and everyone who has helped out here at the Leicester Square Theatre to make this such a wonderful success. I'm welling up. It has been a Fuzz and Sky Potato production for the internet. Bye! How'd you like them Sky Potatoes? You have been listening to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. Rehelesterper. That was the last one in the series. Thanks for listening. If you've enjoyed it, why not go and buy some stuff? I am doing two shows at the Edinburgh Fringe, Talking Cock, The Second Coming, and Richard Herring's Edinburgh Fringe podcast. You can get tickets for both of those at edfringe.com. Hurry up, they're selling fast. And you can also buy the book of Talking Cock, along with lots of my DVDs and Fist of Fun. Series 1 and shortly Series 2 at www.gofasterstripe.com. Also, you might want to listen to producer Ben's other podcast, Do the Right Thing. It's on iTunes and the British Comedy Guide. It's ace. Thanks for listening. We'll be back in the autumn with some more. Woo!
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Thanks for listening. richardherring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.